This week, after months of delay, Medicaid management in Iowa is being put into private hands. This hour, a closer look at the transition. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we'll talk with Iowans using Medicaid to find out what, if any, difficulties they may be experiencing in the move to private management. We'll also hear about some of the biggest challenges surrounding the rollout of the new program from leaders of two of the managed care organizations, as well as the Iowa Department of Human Resources. Are you receiving Medicaid in Iowa and going through this transition? Join our conversation. First, this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This week, after months of delay, Medicaid management in Iowa is being put into private hands as of this Friday, April 1st. No fooling. The health care program for low-income Iowans currently has more than 560,000 recipients in the state who are transitioning to management under one of three private companies, Amerigroup, AmeriHealth, and United Healthcare. Now, Governor Branstad says private management companies will offer more efficiency, and they'll be more flexible in their service and save the state money. This hour, a closer look at that transition. We'll talk with Iowans using Medicaid to find out what, if any, difficulties they may be experiencing in the move to private management, their concerns. We'll also hear about some of the biggest challenges surrounding the rollout of this new program from the leaders of two of the managed care organizations, United Healthcare and Amerigroup, a little bit later. We'll also hear from a representative of the Iowa Department of Human Resources. So, are you receiving Medicaid in Iowa going through this transition? What's it been like? What are your chief concerns? Are you satisfied with the transition so far? Join our conversation this hour, 1-866-780-9100. Our email, river2river@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave a question or a comment. Joining us, first of all, is Iowa City resident Heather Young. We spoke with her late last year. Heather Young's family relies on Medicaid in a number of ways. Heather, welcome back to our program.
Glad to be here.
Let me just remind our audience, when we spoke back to in November, you told us three generations of your family receive assistance from programs that are in some way funded by the state Medicaid program. You are the daughter of two elderly low-income parents with mental health issues. You are the mother of three college students who have hearing and vision losses. And you're the grandmother of a three-year-old granddaughter who has autism.
Yes.
We have about 5 minutes, a lot going on in the show today. So give us a quick update. What are you experiencing now?
Well, so far, my family is utterly confused. We did receive a letter a few months ago giving us the choices between then four different health plans. It was just a one-page letter saying, pick the plan you want, here's the list, and call them. There was no information about any of these plans, just their names and phone numbers. So we did the only thing we could because we were told in the paperwork that we had to pick a plan.
Mm-hmm. So you called one of them?
Yeah, we just did eeny, meeny, miny, mo. And we picked United Healthcare, which was fine. We just got the information from the United Healthcare this weekend. We got a phone. We got a card from my granddaughter. And also their introductory two-page little packet thing, which tells us that we can access their plan if we have a smartphone or a tablet, which we have neither. And we can get on the Internet if we want to know more about what the plan holds. It doesn't tell us who the providers are or what it provides. It does give us one part says additional information. It says each of the three available health plans offer different value-added services. What that means is that that's the difference between the three different plans that we originally offered. What we found out 6 weeks ago was that the plan that we picked under United Healthcare does not have Eleanor's, my granddaughter's, case manager that has been helping us with her autism since she's been very small. And the case managers for the state were hired by a different one of the other insurance companies. Mm. And so we went ahead and switched to the other company. We as of right now, we think we're on two plans because we think we have a contract with Mara Health.
Have you spoken with anybody?
No, because my daughter, we just got this letter from United Healthcare. We thought we dropped them. We called them to drop them, but then they sent us this card. And my daughter got on the phone yesterday during her lunch hour and was trying to get through, but couldn't get through the phones because they're all jammed up.
Mm.
And
okay.
their hours are only until 6 o'clock at night. So it's going to be a process before we even get on the right plan.
Certainly a headache. What about are your family members and that young granddaughter? Are you worried at all that they will not be getting the health care that they need under Medicaid?
Well, yes, and that's already proven true. My concerns all along have been that we wouldn't get the health care we needed, and that was proven because Mayo Clinic doesn't have a contract with any of these providers where they used to contract with Medicaid freely, and Medicaid recipients who had special needs could go to the Mayo Clinic. Now can't go.
Okay, so the Mayo Clinic is not accepting people from these managed care organizations.
No. And if you have a child with extraordinary special needs, they have to go to the Mayo Clinic because that's where you go to get treated for rare diseases.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so before we say goodbye, what are you seeing in the coming days? There's certainly a headache for you, the stress in doing this. What are you looking forward to, hoping to accomplish in the next few days?
I'm hoping to, besides nail down which plan my granddaughter's on, I'm also hoping to nail down that my elderly parents who are in a nursing home who receive Medicaid benefits there too, that the confusion for them will also be settled. Last week when I talked to the nursing home administrators, they could not tell me what was going to be covered and what wasn't going to be covered for elderly people that are on this plan.
Mm. Okay. Thanks for the quick picture of what's going on with you as you transition to the new management under Medicaid. Heather Young, an Iowa City resident whose family, three generations of her family, rely on Medicaid. I have a feeling we'll be checking back with you at some time in the future. Heather, I hope things will turn out well for you.
I think I just took on a new part-time job.
Okay. Heather Young, thank you very much. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about the Medicaid privatization. The management of it is going into private hands this week. The date is April 1st, this Friday, and we're focusing on that this hour. Are you receiving Medicaid in Iowa through and going through this transition? What's it been like? What are your chief concerns? Are you satisfied so far? 1-866-780-9100. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk or good old-fashioned email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Joining me now, we have two of the leaders of two of the three managed care organizations that are taking over the management of Medicaid. We mentioned the three were Amerigroup, AmeriHealth, and United Healthcare. Cynthia McDonald is with us, Iowa president for Amerigroup in our Des Moines studio. Also joining her in the Des Moines studio, Kim Foltz, the CEO of United Healthcare of Iowa. We did extend an invitation to the third managed care organization, AmeriHealth. They declined our invitation to be a part of this live program. Cynthia McDonald, Kim Foltz, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Very great to be here.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
I want to ask you, broadly speaking, what are the biggest challenges you've been facing? Cynthia, you go first, please, at Amerigroup.
Well, I think the biggest challenges are moving things forward in a fairly quick pace and ensuring that we're taking care of all the needs, the kinds of things that, pardon me, that Heather talked about, ensuring that we're ready and providing providers and getting materials ready and all the component parts that are part of the complexities of a Medicaid program.
Do you feel you've accomplished that? You're doing a good job of that?
I think we are. I think we're feeling very confident, very ready to begin on the 1st. We know there will be some matters that we'll have to take care of along the way, but we are very ready. We've got providers ready. We've got materials ready. And the most important part, which is what I really hear for Heather, and one of the great advantages of managed care, is the case management component, someone who steps in to really help coordinate all the component parts.
Mm-hmm. Right. And she had to switch over to Kim Foltz, your managed care organization, United Healthcare of Iowa. React to Heather Young's situation. You heard about that, Kim. Utterly confused, she says. She had to switch to get a case manager. Now she finds out the Mayo Clinic is not accepting patients under United Healthcare of Iowa.
Well, I think the component that we want to focus on, certainly here, and back to your first question about challenges, is really the fear with this change and ensuring that we're communicating and getting the information to members. And importantly, that we're meeting them where they need to be with that communication. And so we certainly hear comments and appreciate the feedback of members such as Heather to help guide us and make some of those assurances to members that we do have access to that information and that we can get them the answers that they need. Case management, as my colleague Cynthia McDonald shared, is very integral and a core component of managed care. And one of the things we want to ensure, and we continue to communicate, and we understand certainly the importance of ensuring that our members do have this information, is the continuity of care that's in place to ensure members have access to those case managers. The choices that Heather made, those are afforded to Iowa Medicaid members, and we want to ensure that there's clear understanding of the support, that members do have choices, and we're proud to be here. We're thrilled to begin serving Iowans. We're ready to serve Iowans on 4-1, and we want to ensure that they get the answers to those questions.
Okay, we heard news this week, and it was backed up by Heather Young here, that the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, has rejected Iowa's contracts. How are you handling that now? Is that just not going to be an option for Medicaid recipients in Iowa, Kim Foltz?
We've got a great relationship with the Mayo Clinic on a national level, and what we heard from them is that their intent is to provide that tertiary care. So to Heather's specific example, we firmly believe that we will be able to work with the Mayo Clinic to arrange for services that are tertiary related and are very specific, and providers in Iowa are not able to provide those services. We feel confident we'll be able to continue to work with the Mayo Clinic for those services.
The original date for stepping over into private hands for the management of Medicaid here in Iowa was January 1st. That was set back now a total of 3 months due to a couple of delays. Cynthia McDonald, let me ask you, what's changed over that period of 3 months? How are you better prepared now compared to what might have been on January 1st?
Sure. For the record, we have been ready, and I think though the extra time has given us just more opportunity to ensure we've got, you know, a plethora of providers in our network, and actually we had to go through a process of ensuring that members, the members that are assigned to us, have those providers in our network. And in fact, the state and federal governments ensured that. And so it gave us more time to continue that honing. And that gives us, of course, a great deal of confidence that we are there even more for the start this Friday, and look forward to that.
Mm-hmm. Cynthia, let me ask you, the Mayo Clinic example of perhaps a larger question, is that a signal, a harbinger of other problems to come with out-of-state care, people wanting out-of-state care and being denied it in this new situation?
No, not at all. In fact, we have the ability, and with Mayo Clinic, the same thing that Kim Foltz indicated, we have the opportunity, especially with members who are being seen in places like Mayo Clinic, to offer a case-by-case review of the situation and work with Mayo on a case-by-case basis, and they certainly have indicated that to us as well. So that's a typical process for out-of-state providers to work through that, and it's very common in managed care. We do managed care in 19 other states. I was our 20th state for Amerigroup, and so again, this is not unusual in the managed care genre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a record in other states. Not an all entirely good. Let me have you address that because it's in our news. Amerigroup, Cynthia, in 2008 agreed to pay $225 million to settle claims that defrauded the Illinois Medicaid program by systematically avoiding enrolling pregnant women and unhealthy patients in the state's managed care program, showing through documents of the U.S. Department of Justice. That is worrying. How can you assure Iowans, Medicaid recipients here, that sort of thing is not going to happen?
What I can do is I can talk about Iowa. Each state has unique situations, unique issues. What I'm confident about is Iowa and the preparation that I have done. I have a very long career, almost somewhere near 25 plus years in doing this business. And the base of where I started was as an advocate. And so all these kinds of questions and all the sort of fears are very, you know, grounded and real. But what I can tell you is that at the base of what we try to do, and I know my fellow MCOs do here, managed care organizations do here, is really put that patient in the center and mm-hmm. really drive from there and coordinate those needs around that care. And that's very true in Iowa, and certainly in the culture of Iowa is to take care of people here, which we are very committed to do.
Since I mentioned the record of Amerigroup, I have to mention, Kim, the organization United Healthcare was fined over $170 million in 2014 by the state of California for multiple issues, including failing to make timely payments and responding to provider disputes. I understand the company has appealed that fine. Assure us that this sort of thing, making timely payments, responding to disputes in a timely fashion, will happen here in Iowa.
Well, I can assure you that our commitment and the work that we've done with our state partner to ensure that we're ready to meet those expectations has been very clear. And our commitment to our partners in Iowa, we've been serving Iowans for over 30 years. We have over a half a million Iowans that we're serving today. So we have a long track record of working in Iowa with Iowans, with Iowa providers. And we believe that that track record speaks for itself here in Iowa. The strong partnerships that we have with providers across the state, that partnership is very critical and important to us. And so we spend a great deal of time cultivating those relationships to ensure that we're here to help deliver core services to our members in partnership with those providers throughout the state.
Talking about the transition to Medicaid, the privatization of the management of Medicaid here in Iowa this hour, and we have with us Kim Folt, CEO of one of the three managed care organizations that will be managing Medicaid here in Iowa, United Healthcare of Iowa. Cynthia McDonald, good enough to come into our studio as well, Iowa president for Amerigroup. Representative AmeriHealth declined our invitation to be part of the live program. Let's go to our first caller. Rush is it Stanwood, Rush?
That's correct. It's Stanwood.
Okay, Rush. We don't have much time. Please tell us what's on your mind. You're a recipient of Medicaid somehow?
Yes, I am. I am Social Security disabled because I have brain cancer, and it's not the good kind of brain cancer. I have multiple doctors that I see on a fairly regular basis as they try to manage my situation. My primary place where I go to get the services I need is in Cedar Rapids. It's a Mercy Hospital, and I have been working with a lady there who tries to understand which one of the providers would be the best one to use to get the services I need and to let the hospital get paid what they need to get paid. So it's been very difficult to understand, and that the contract negotiation process went way long. And then when I have received information from AmeriHealth, Ceritas. I've called in and talked to the lady at the hospital and said, do I need to do anything? And she said she's constantly been telling me that they don't have contracts negotiated with all of the carriers, and I think they finally got contracts negotiated. Then when I called AmeriHealth and said, is my provider in network? And my first answer about a month ago was, yes, your providers are in network. And then when I got more information from AmeriHealth, I called back in to make sure, and it was like calling the IRS. I got told no, and now I'm being told that, hey, this is your provider. We'll reach out to them and try to get contracts.
Okay, Rush, we're running out of time. I'm sure there's a lot of this story that's very important that we could hear. We just don't have the time, Rush. Thank you very much. Do you have a short question? It sounds like it's just the lack of communication here of getting the right information, huh, Rush?
There seems to be a poor coordination between the providers and the organization that I'm working with.
Okay. Let's get an answer to that, Rush.
I haven't figured out yet.
Okay. We wish you the best of luck in getting that figured out. Rush in Stanwood, thank you very much. What about this? It concerns AmeriHealth. Neither of you represent Cynthia nor Kim represent AmeriHealth. But this seems to be, from what we're hearing and what we're reading in the newspaper, a common problem. People just not having the information, the coordination. It's not a fluid transition. Cynthia, address that. It seems to be falling short.
Yeah, of course, as you indicate, I can't speak for another company. What I can tell you is that that provider system is in our provider directory. And so, but in general, I would say, you know, there have been some providers that have been coming along the path to work with the managed care entities to sign up and be providers and be participating. That's what it's called in this business. And let me just step back and say I'm very sorry to hear about the difficult situation that you're having and also your difficult health condition.
I think
it's very important, very, very important that a case manager work with you and that in any of our companies, the opportunity to do that, it seems like that is going to help you a great deal. It is unfortunate that you're experiencing that, but what I can tell you and assure you is that that is the primary piece of our job, is to ensure that we have care managers that reach out to you, work with you, and connect you in a way so you can focus on the many other important things.
Okay.
And it's our job to bring you along into the system.
Kim Foltz, the last question before we have to say goodbye. This is Kelly, one of our listeners, emailing. Kelly writes, I work with a physician's office, offices professionally, and they are worried about the increased difficulty with lower reimbursements and more hoops to get paid and uncertainty about their coverage. Address that. It's certainly some bumps in the road. We don't know. This is all anecdotal, of course, but Kim Foltz, you must be hearing some of it.
Sure, and appreciate the opportunity to respond. So I think one thing that we want to be very clear about is providers, there's not a decrease in reimbursement today. So providers are being reimbursed based on the current rates that they have with the state. And I think that's really important. We have been conveying that message, and so we appreciate the opportunity to convey it yet again. The state has worked very hard to ensure through our partnership and this transition that there are protections in place for providers. So rates for physician providers are the same. The coverage, what someone is covered for on the 31st, they're covered for on the 1st. So there's just not that cliff that we need to fear.
Kim Foltz, thank you very much. CEO of United Healthcare of Iowa, Cynthia McDonald, Iowa President for AmeriGroup, both joining us in our Des Moines studio. Thank you, ladies, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back in just a moment. We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Key for this hour. We're talking about Medicaid privatization in this state. After 3 months of delay, Medicaid management is being put into private hands as of this Friday, April 1st. This is the healthcare program, Medicaid for low-income Iowans, currently with more than 560,000 recipients in our state. It's a huge program, $4 billion and transitioning to management under one of three private companies, Amera Group, Amera Health, and United Healthcare. Representatives from America Group and United Healthcare were good enough to join us in the first half hour. Coming up in just a moment to answer your questions, because we're reaching out this hour for those of you who are receiving Medicaid in Iowa going through this transition. We'd like you to share your experiences, your concerns, your degree of satisfaction up to this point. You can do that 1-866-780-9100. A little bit later, we'll be joined by Amy McCoy of the Iowa Department of Human Services and hopefully get some of those questions answered that apply to many Iowans. You can also write your question or comment on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page, tweet us at IPR Talk, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's talk with Carol Croats, a person who is going through this transition, joining us by phone. Hello, Carol.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for having me on your program.
We're so glad you could join us and to share a little bit about your situation. I understand you're disabled. You receive Medicaid, also Medicare, by the way. But we have just a few minutes. What are you experiencing?
Well, it's been very chaotic, and getting answers to questions has just not been forthcoming. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to get any answers for anything. I didn't pick an MCO. I decided to go with the one that I was assigned to.
And who was that?
United.
United Healthcare. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Uh-huh. And, you know, I didn't want to use up my one chance to change for any reason. So I decided to stay with this one. I had not heard a single word from United until today. And I did get in the mail today a booklet and also my card. And I was just browsing through the booklet a little bit, and things are very, very vague. And while they do provide, it does provide some information, it really doesn't provide specific information about what coverages will actually be.
Have you been able to talk with anyone there at United Healthcare?
No, actually I haven't. I've tried several times and could not. I did talk with somebody at IME who, about the original mailing I got, and she wasn't very well, what she said was, you know, comparing benefits, there wasn't really any comparison with the information that IME had sent out to us, so I was a little concerned about that. But one of I'm in the minority, I believe. I'm an exception. I have Medicare for my physical disability, and Medicaid is secondary for me.
I see.
And I have the form of Medicaid that is MEPD, Medicaid for Employed People with Disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So that places me in a little separate, in a separate category. In addition, the majority of my providers are through the University of Iowa, which has contracted with all three MCOs. So that makes my situation better than most people's. I do have a couple providers who are not with the university, and I have concerns about whether or not I'll still be able to see them. One of those providers has been trying valiantly to sign up with all three MCOs and had done what he thought he needed to do on the internet site through the state to sign up for those. And he has gotten no response from anybody and doesn't really know where he's standing, and he's very confused. The process is very confusing for him.
Right.
So one of my questions would be is, you know, how can they make it easier for providers to sign up with all three who want to do that?
Okay.
And the other thing is that I'm very concerned about oversight. And I think, you know, the legislature needs to take a very hard look at that and come up with something that's got some real teeth in it.
Yep.
That also includes some beneficiaries on maybe some committees or commissions or whatever. Because out here in the trenches, we're the ones who know what's going on.
Right.
I have listened to Senate committee meetings, both with representatives from the state and then also with representatives from the MCOs, and I've been hearing lots of information, first of all, that's not true, but secondly, information that doesn't align with what's actually happening with people. There are a lot of people who are in really bad situations and aren't able to get any answers. And I guess what I want to say is oversight is critical, and the other thing is for people not to be afraid to use the ombudsman's office.
And we'll
I have huge concerns about that because, you know, the bill didn't pass to yet anyway to expand that office. And right now it's my understanding they only have two people, you know, to handle 560,000 people.
We are going to talk about that in the remaining time of the hour. I'm afraid that's all the time we have. But for your personal experience, thank you very much. So many open questions, Carol Kroetz. Thank you so much for sharing some of, I guess, the confusion that you're feeling right now. We hope you get it sorted out in short order.
Oh, I appreciate that because, that really needs to happen.
Okay. Carol Kroetz, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Carol Kroetz and I, when going through this transition to the privatization of Medicaid management here in Iowa, if you're in that situation, please share your situation. What's it been like? What have been your chief concerns? Are you getting satisfaction with the transition so far? 1-866-780-9100. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us for the remainder of the hour, Amy McCoy, Public Information Officer for the Iowa Department of Human Services in our Des Moines studio. Amy McCoy, welcome back to our program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Before we address the need here, the specific topic, remind us, what is the DHS's role in this transition and in this new program setup?
Right. We are the state agency that oversees the Medicaid program. So we've done that for many years since its implementation here in Iowa. That's the taxpayer-funded program, both state and federal dollars, that helps low-income Iowans and those with disabilities be able to access health insurance. So what we're doing now is we will oversee this entire implementation process as we move into a new model that's through health plans. And really what this is now our Medicaid members are going to be able to access the same types of health coverage that most Americans are accessing through their private health plans. There will be the same types of benefits that were offered under the Medicaid program. So those do very much remain the same. What's different now are the value-added services that are available through this program, things that were never possible under the traditional Medicaid program, things like smoking cessation, weight management, after-school programs, just more flexibility when it comes to wellness. And then, of course, members will be wanting to look for which networks their providers have signed with. And what we know is that more than 96% of the currently active in-state providers have signed with an MCO, more than 75% with two of the health plans, and nearly 70% with all three. Those numbers are a little old, so I expect that those would actually be even higher. But what those show are very robust networks across the three managed care organizations. And those really were the numbers that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services approved this plan on.
Right. We heard similar things from the heads of the MCOs that we had last half hour. From our listeners, and I'm looking at my screen, things that have been sharing here, I hear words like chaos and confusion, a lack of information of what to do. Amy McCoy, you've been listening to this conversation as well. I have to believe that's what you're hearing at the DHS as well. How do you react to the real bumps that people are experiencing and the stress that it causes?
You know, we continue doing outreach, and we've been doing outreach to our members for about 6 months now, and it started with getting enrollment packets, making sure we did the introduction to the program. We have videos at our websites. We have FAQs. We have a very good call-in center that we had some trouble with early on in the process, and you heard people talk about that a little bit. But when members are calling into our call center now, they have waits of about 1 minute or less to be able to get help. So if they have questions about choice, and really choice is one of the bedrocks of this program, members now get to have some choice and flexibility in their care. They don't have just one time that they can make a change. Our members can make changes more than once. They have until the middle of June to do that. We really want people to understand that this is a new way of getting their health coverage and that they have the options now to make some choices and to really participate in their health care.
Amy McCoy with us of the Iowa Department of Human Services. We're so glad that she's joining us in our Des Moines studio. Join us with your question or comment, 1-866-780-9100. Of course, looking for those of you who are receiving Medicaid in Iowa, going through this transition, like Hope in Des Moines. Hope, welcome to a program. You are receiving Medicaid?
Yes, and thank you for taking calls from individuals that are currently going through the system. I agree with the previous caller that called. I think her name was Carol. And I just really want to stress that what is being said is more like a wordsmithing or political talking as compared to reality. And it's not a fear-based, or it's not chaos that is not real. You cannot get answers. It might be maybe 1% that you can now have to wait or drop calls, or you can get in. But if you don't get any information or hardly any information, it doesn't do you any good to get a live voice or get conflicting information. So maybe the drops are better, but that doesn't help us. Having quitting smoking, that's already been there. I don't think the services will be any different. And my issue is, especially the disabled people, I think there was a very big mistake to bring us on for NCOs, because our care is so much more complex before you even dealt with the general public. And we are the ones that are really struggling, because it really is a matter of keeping our health where it is and improving, or going downhill pretty quickly.
Hope, can you tell us, we have a lot of other input coming in here. Tell us specifically and briefly about your situation as a disabled person, why you're not satisfied yet.
Just yesterday I received from United Healthcare two sheets for in my card, just two sheets double-sided, and everything referenced for me to go online. I don't know. I'd like for Amy to explain how many people on Medicaid, especially disabled, even have the ability. I don't have it. I'm too poor to have it in my home. And where I live, the library's closed today. So even if I wanted to get the information, everything was online. Now, the other lady got a booklet. Maybe that's in the mail today. But even when you get the booklet and even when you look at the information, you get no real information that private insurance gives to make a choice. And I have had to call DHS twice because I've had two supervisors with a subcontract that I called tell me that these benefits are no longer available, or that the time to receive the benefit is longer. I called DHS and they say, of course, that's not true. And then, you know, they would talk to me. This is okay. a supervisor I'm talking to.
Right. Hope, in the interest of time, let's get an answer for you. Thank you very much. We're sorry about your distress
I really want to make it clear that this is not something that is just people being unnecessarily concerned. Right now, for transportation, just so you know, it was supposed to be set up, and I went to the site as I was waiting, and because I do have some data on my phone, and I was not even on there, and I asked if they can send me a form, and they said, well, we can't even get to the form till April 1st. I've got an appointment. I want access. I don't care about getting a dumbbell.
We feel your stress, and hope that it gets a lot better. Hope in Des Moines. We have other callers coming too. Amy McCoy, obviously a very frustrated Medicaid recipient there.
Yeah, and absolutely acknowledging that when someone has complex care needs, it is complex, and there are a lot of moving pieces. And that's exactly what the health plans are here to help do. And as we go through this transition, we really do have to have people call to get connected, whether it's through their case manager or through their health plan that can help walk them through which providers are available to them. They can still talk with their current providers. There is information that comes in the mail. And then as far as information being available on the web, those are our additional pieces, but we're absolutely happy to walk people through that information by phone as well. Hope touched a little bit on the transportation piece, and members have been able to call and set up their appointments, whether through IME or through the managed care organizations, and then any of the appointments that we're taking through Iowa Medicaid will be transferring over to the new health plan, so that all of those appointments are available in their systems to make sure that members who have appointments right away are able to get to those appointments. But again, encouraging people to call us to be able to get the answers. Each situation for our Medicaid members is very unique. So it's hard to speak in general terms, especially when the care is complex. We know that most of our members are accessing primary care. They don't have complex needs. The actual average Medicaid member is a 9-year-old who's quite healthy, and the only types of services that they use are the immunizations, well child checks, and then things like sore throats and ear infections. So that's really the majority of our group. Then we look at some other members that really the health plans are able to help through the tools and resources that they bring into our state, which are tools and resources and technology that Iowa Medicaid just does not have. And they're going to be able to leverage those to help our members in a way that we've not been able to coordinate coordinate their care before. So for people with chronic conditions like diabetes or asthma, they're going to be able to help them stay on top of that through medication by connecting them with primary care provider. And instead of having members overutilize things like the emergency room. So we're hearing a lot from our members who have complex needs. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that we have to give that extra attention
would
to.
Would you acknowledge, I hear a lot of what perhaps you, you talk about generally speaking, but what we're hearing about here is a lack of communication, very frustrated people. How are you at the DHS answering the frustrations that we're hearing this entire hour?
One of the big things, again, we're hearing a lot from people with complex care, and that's about 10% of our Medicaid population. So we've done some special things for outreach for them, including a real strong focus on case management. That was something important to our federal partners as well. So we've made sure that those case managers are connected with the new members so that every new member to the health plans has their case manager in place. They've got someone who's looking out for them. Now, members can keep their current case manager for 6 months if that person is still available. So that helps with some of this continuity of care as we make this change. But for those really, really intensive needs, people are going to have case management, someone to help walk them through this process. And we do need them to call us when it comes to things like eligibility and enrollment. That remains one of the functions that we're doing through Iowa Medicaid.
Amy McCoy is with us, Public Information Officer for the Iowa Department of Human Services. We're talking about the transition to private management of Medicaid here in Iowa. So many calls, so much input here. We don't have much time left, 5 minutes. Let's go to Mary in Northwood. Mary, in the interest of time, please put it in a nutshell and tell us what you're experiencing.
I have epilepsy, and my pharmacy is not in the network, so I called to get my pharmacy in the network. Over 2 months, I talked to 24 people at United Healthcare, and finally the 24th person told me I needed a gap exception. I would spend over 8 hours on the telephone. So my concern is that the state put pressure on the insurance companies, on United Healthcare specifically, to be more efficient in their operation. That's unconscionable. I would talk to people, they'd say, well, I can't call that department because no one will answer there. We don't have access to the pharmacy department from this number. Finally, someone said, you are calling the wrong place. You need to call over here. So I would really like to see the state put pressure on the insurance companies to be more efficient and on top of it. And I will get off the phone now.
Thank you. So assure Mary and others in her situation that the oversight is there, Amy McCoy of the DHS, that there will be pressure applied and that this will – efficiency is supposed to be central to this transition to private management, isn't it? And that's not what we're hearing in Mary's case.
Well, and Mary, I appreciate your feedback, and we will be looking closely at that. One of the things we do look at every week is to see how many outstanding contracts there may be with current providers in our network. We follow up closely with our health plan partners. Again, we are trying to remove any barriers for Iowa Medicaid providers to come into this new system, offer that care to members, continuing care to the members. And like I said, we know that, getting close to 100% of providers have signed with a managed care organization. So we're really, really bringing people into that network, trying to keep that outreach going, updating call centers to make sure that they have that information when people call in. This is a big change, and people are very concerned about oversight. So when we talk about oversight, we look at that kind of in three buckets. We have some very intensive federal oversight through CMS. We have our state oversight through our state legislators and code and rules. And then we also have a very extensive contract with the managed care plans as well. Contract compliance is absolutely essential. It's where Iowa will set itself apart in really making sure that we have the program that we want for our members. So okay. That was something that was a lot of thought put in from the very beginning to make sure that contract compliance is there for our members.
Amy McCoy, let me make sure I get in this final question. What about people in rural areas? How do they receive care when their previous providers are perhaps not signed up? We talked about getting the providers signed up with one of these companies.
So that's one of the things that our federal partners looked at, is to make sure that there is access across the entire state. And we met those benchmarks to be able to receive our waiver approval. There are rural areas that right now under our fee-for-service program, we have trouble with providing access to our members because we are a state that has many rural areas and we have some workforce issues as well. So it's not exclusive to managed care by any means.
Right.
What the tool that managed care can bring to this is that they can get out to those areas and work with those providers to make those administrative processes easier to bring them on board to Iowa Medicaid.
Okay. When we talk with you, and hopefully we will in a month, two, I don't know, 3 months' time, Amy McCoy, we haven't heard one bit of praise for the transition on this program, and admittedly, anecdotal, what we've been having, people call in and write in as well. Do you expect that will change when we talk again, perhaps in 2-3 months?
I absolutely do. I think it's very much like when someone leaves one job and starts a new job and there's a new health plan, it can be overwhelming to get to know the information. You need to reach out for help. We are here to help people. We want them to call us. We want to know what they need. Again, the Iowa Medicaid Member Services number is 800-338-8366. We want to hear from our members when they have issues so that we can make those changes and we know that we keep meeting their needs.
Amy McCoy, thank you so much for joining us. Public Information Officer for the Iowa Department of Human Services. Thank you, Amy, for coming into our studio.
Thanks, Ben.
River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow, of course, Politics Wednesday. Continue to be plenty of politics. Also, Senator Grassley at the center of it. We'll talk about that tomorrow. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.